Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
The election is banned for runoff because 19 candidates are definitely going to split the vote.
Senegalese candidates step up their campaign ahead of next Sunday's presidential vote. We'll have an analysis.
Other political actors we are still, you know, discussing with, like Joshua Osi, who agrees with the idea of transition. Let me tell you that we are going to constitute the biggest political platform in the country.
The leader of the Liberators Party announces the formation of an opposition alliance for political transition in Cameroon.
They continue to sell our police. They've told our police to domestic helper, and that's unacceptable because we need more police to mine our street to protect us.
And a human rights group petitions the Inspector General of Police to disband the VIP unit of the Nigerian Police Service. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The regional coordinator for Central Africa at the Institute for Security Studies in Senegal says there's a strong chance of a runoff in the coming presidential election. Dr. Oluwole Ojewale also says it appears that both domestic and international pressure played a role in the decision to release Ousmane Sonko, a government critic and leader of the opposition Pasteur Le Patriot. His comments come after Sonko vowed the party's presidential candidate would defeat the 18 other presidential candidates to take over from outgoing President Macky Sall. Sall's second and final term expires on April 2nd. For analysis of the latest political developments ahead of next Sunday's presidential vote, I reached Dr. Oluwole Ojewale in the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
Based on what is readily available in terms of observation, and also the underlying factor of mobilization, I think Pasteur is in a good position to make such statements. And their leader, Sonko, obviously is riding on the wave of popularity that the party is enjoying now. This election is going to be down to two candidates, and that is going to be Pasteur candidate, Faye, and Amadou Ba, that is being supported by the incumbent president. And the reason is not far-fetched. Why the latter can boast of resources and also the instrumentality of state forces. The Pasteur party, with their candidates Faye and Sonko as the bedrock of mobilization, are getting wider appeal among the youth.
Talking about a runoff, Senegal is noted for competitive elections where sometimes it's difficult for the opposition party to win outright. Some suggest that a second or a runoff is more feasible. But do you see this happening?
The election is banned for runoff because 19 candidates are definitely going to split the vote. So what is going to now happen after that first ballot is serious horse trading, compromise here and there. And that is the reason why I said we cannot outrightly say that the victory is in the pocket of Pasteur and Faye as a candidate because, you know, offers will be made when election goes into runoff. And majority of the front runners for this election as well are people who left Macky Sall's coalition party to go and run as, I mean, on another platform. These are people that parties will have to negotiate with. For such people, it might be easy for them to trace themselves, steps back into the ruling party. And Pasteur has wider appeal, but do they have the deep pockets?
Was it a mistake for Sonko to be released at this time, at least a week before the election, where I hear he's attracting a lot of the youth who seem to be displeased with how the country is being administered or being ruled by outgoing President Macky Sall?
No, it wasn't a strategic mistake. There are also a lot of pressure, internal pressure and external pressure, to say this political persecution must come to an end and Sonko must be free. And the president is also talking about reconciliation. How can you be talking about reconciliation if you don't bring back, if you don't find a way to release your political prisoners? So I think the ball is no longer in Macky Sall's cards. He's winding down to the last day already, and they have to paint himself in good light, you know. So I think those are part of the efforts to quickly ensure that this amnesty law is passed and Sonko is released and Faye is also released as well, releasing him a week to the election. At least what they've been able to achieve is to keep him off the ballots. They've done that already. So let's see how he will now be able to leverage his popularity to mobilize for his party.
Sonko has promised justice, saying there wouldn't be any witch hunting. However, he says there will be justice, and those who might have committed atrocities will have to face justice, but there will not be any witch hunting. Is he hitting the right note at this time, and are his statements generating any waves at all?
Every action on the part of Sonko have a constituency that it resonates with. And the fact is, Sonko is not on the ballot. Sonko is not going to be the next president as had today, even if Pastor wins the election. So I don't think those decisions are, if they win eventually, I don't think they will be so prerogative of Sonko, because what he also needs to be very careful about is that people will be looking with another perspective, like, okay, is he going to be the one that will be remotely controlling the president if he comes into power, for him to be making such audacious statements now? So those are statements and posturing that can affect their electoral dividends on the election day, as people will be watching such unguarded rhetorics. You get into power before you begin to talk about what you want to do, as far as sensitive issues like that are concerned. So I think such rhetorics are rather misplaced now. They can do more harm, particularly when intelligent voters has assess them, than it can bring fortune to them.
Dr. Oluwole Ojewale is the regional coordinator for Central Africa at the Institute for Security Studies in Senegal. He spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Still in Senegal, Anta Babacar Nghom, the only female presidential candidate, says she is best placed to provide the change citizens are demanding in the coming March 24 presidential election. Nghom is a business executive who promises to transform the West African country into a path of industrialization. She tells VOA in an exclusive interview either she will be the queen or she will make the king. Senegalese go to the polls on March 24th to choose a new president to replace outgoing President Macky Sall, whose second and final term expires on April 2. Expressing confidence on electoral prospects, Nghom tells me that prospective voters have been responding positively to her campaign in the run-up to the vote. Here is the conclusion of the conversation.
So do you think the people of Senegal are ready for a woman president? Do you think they are ready?
When I hear the question, I always say the question should not be asked anymore. Senegal has had women at all positions of power, to prime minister, to every position of power. The only one is president of this republic. So which means that men in Senegal, they've already accepted that women can be at a position of power. Of course, just like in every country, you will meet some men that don't think it should happen. But Senegal is no exception. We will talk to them. We will convince them. But most women hold down the homes in Senegal. And men know that. They trust us with the companies, not the houses anymore. Of course, we're still holding down the house, the homes, but the companies, the farms, the police, security forces, women are everywhere. So why not the presidency? It should just be normal. Just like Mr. Barack Obama said, yes, you can. I said, yes, they can. And I will just tell them that you can do it. You've done better. You've done it before.
What should the people of Senegal expect from you when or if they decide to give you the mandate?
First of all, to restore hope. It's a necessity. Senegalese people, mostly the youth, they've lost hope. We've lost hope. I must restore that hope. Then reconciliate the Senegalese people between themselves. Restore democracy and rule of law. We need to trust our constitutions. We need to trust our justice. And justice must remain independent with the other constitutions. I will first start by restoring those. It's the ground base on which I will start building. And then second, I will restore the economy. As I was saying, as an industrial captain, industrialization is my solution because it's my culture. That's what I believe. And that's the era we are at in Senegal. It's a time of industrialization of in agriculture, farming, in all fields. It's time of industrialization. Then they know that I will elevate and count and work with my private sector and create champions, real African and Senegalese champions, those that will, to their turn, actually create millions of jobs. It's a partnership, and that partnership will be very strong. They know that I'm somebody who cares a lot about the environment. I will stop at the protection of environment. I'm actually shocked that the candidates don't talk about that. I'm for the protection of our environment because I believe that we've received a heritage from our elders, from our ancestors, and we must protect it and preserve it and make sure that our beautiful country, Senegal, is transferred to the youngest generations in the best states, et cetera, et cetera. Last but not least, and which is very important for us, is to put the citizen back to the center of all priorities and interests. Health. You guys have Obamacare. I dream of having that same health care in Senegal. Education. Recenter and go back to the core, which is educate Senegalese citizens. First of all, I will stop at the language. I believe in speaking multiple languages. That's probably what's allowing me to speak with you today. So I will introduce English as a second official language in Senegal from primary school.
What are your expectations of the elections and how it's going to be organized or administered by the Electoral Commission of Senegal?
Well, there are lots of suspicions today. There are lots of suspicions. Is these elections, are they going to conduct it in the most honest and rightful way? I'm not sure. I'm not convinced because they're already telling us that our Constitutional Council is corrupted. Mr. President, Republic of Senegal, said that there is an institutional crisis during election time. How do you not cause and provoke doubts? We have doubts. So most of my messages towards the government and the administration is make sure that these elections are actually, they go the rightful way, the most rightful way. Because if any way else, if that's not the case, then we will be in a real crisis. Because Senegalese citizens will not accept it. Candidates will not accept it. This is not a one-turn election. We all know that this mostly will be a two-turn elections. So let no one think about stealing these elections from us.
And Babacar Ngom is the only female presidential candidate in the Senegal's coming election. She spoke with me from the capital, Dakar. In Nigeria, a human rights group has petitioned the Inspector General of Police to disband the VIP unit of the police service. The One Love Foundation contends that it is the duty of the government to protect the life and property of all citizens, not only for the rich and powerful in society. The petition comes as Nigerians express worry over a sharp insecurity increase, including kidnappings and attacks by armed groups such as Islamic insurgent groups like Boko Haram. Patrick Osagi Ehelo is the founder of One Love Foundation. He tells me that the VIP branch of the police service is illegal and must be disbanded.
As a matter of fact, some senators have about 7 policemen, and the police have become a domestic helper to the rich and famous in Nigeria. And that's not unacceptable in any society. So I therefore say that we need more police, to do the needful in our society, that the IGP has to, be a man of his word. When the IG came in, he told us that he was a lion and a tiger, that henceforth, they are not going to be a VIP police, it's going to record them. But he has become a recurrent decimal for every inspector general for the past 8 or 9 years. There's no roadblock, there's no Section 4, there's no a VIP police, but they continue to sell our police. They've turned our police to domestic helper, and that's unacceptable because we need more police to mind our street, to protect our citizens, to do the needful. And that's why I have to petition the IG to take him to court. So at least withdraw the VIP from these people
Don't you think that leaders of the country needs protection as enshrined in the Constitution as they go about doing their businesses on behalf of the people of Nigeria?
It is also enshrined in our Constitution that the government must protect the life and property. Are they doing that? No. You cannot protect the super rich and neglect the very poor. It's unlawful because you do not want to turn the people to outlaw. Because if you don't have security, as it is now in the country, perhaps the people can turn to become an outlaw.
But insecurity in the country, some observers agree that the police are doing their best and that even the army is involved in ensuring that this ongoing kidnappings and attacks by bandits and Islamic insurgents are being confronted at the moment. Calling for the disbandment of the police VIP branch will not have any effect on what is currently ongoing. Your take?
I disagree with you. It will have a serious effect on it because we do not have enough police to man our streets. Listen, go to the United Nations, the Geneva Convention, and look at what the statistics said about how many police you should have to mind certain numbers of people. We are far short of that, all right? So if we don't have enough police to protect the citizens, why should we be giving a battalion to protect the very few? Let me mention, for example, Dangote, for example. You know how many police he has? I'm just a citizen like Dangote. Let me mention, for example, Akpabio. You know how many police he has? Let me mention members of House of Assembly that we voted in. Why should they be protected and leave us unprotected? We that voted for them. It's unacceptable in every society. If they need the protection, let us introduce a private bodyguard or a private security guard for more gainful employment in the society. They should stop taking advantage of us and taking advantage of the system. It's preposterous. It's unacceptable.
But Mr. Holo, the president recently met governors and they agreed that possibly there should be a national police service. This, observers say, forms a part of government effort to ensure that citizens are protected. Why are you not supporting that effort?
I'm not saying I'm not supporting that, but it's going to be very difficult. There has to be a law enacting or guiding constitutionally that the governors will not be the one. They become the one who are in charge. The governors will have in the state who will conduct election and get 18 over 18. Because they rig the election with what we call vigilante. So if you now give license to them to be the head, also to head the police services, they will use it to rig the election. So I therefore suggest that we can still have the federal police and have the state police, but there should be a law that prohibits that the governor will not be the authority that will control the police. Because if we give them that right, it means we are doomed. Because these people are not for us.
Patrick Osagie Eholo is the founder of One Love Foundation. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. The leader of the opposition party called the Liberators is announcing the formation of the Alliance for Political Transition in Cameroon, or APT. This after talks with other opposition and civil society groups which agree to form an alliance ahead of next year's general election. Olivier Bile says the aim is to enable a united platform to challenge the governing Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM, led by long-term President Paul Biya. The formation of the alliance comes ahead of the presidential election scheduled for 2025. Paul Atanga Nji, Minister for Territorial Administration, said in a statement that the planned alliance is illegal. But Olivier Bile tells me that it appears the core reason for the formation of the alliance is to intimidate the governing CPDM party.
The initiative takes into account the fact that the Cameroonian political landscape since 1990, with the beginning of the democratization process, the landscape is not democratically, actually functioning well. We have many, many problems with our democratic system, which is not balanced, which is not equitable, which is not, when you consider the electoral process functioning as a democracy should. So we have started discussing. We have also continued carrying out the consultations with all those political actors, and many of them have given the agreement for us to start a strong work on that issue. So we have held our first meeting a few days ago.
So, Prof, as it stands now, all the other civil society groups and opposition groups have agreed to form this alliance ahead of the election, correct?
Yeah, that is it.
What are your electoral prospects? Or what are the chances that you will be able to pose any significant threat at all?
The main thing that the population of Cameroon, wherever they are living, are telling us to do is to mutualize our capacities. They have been always telling us that you can't do anything in the Cameroonian political landscape as long as you remain in a sort of, isolated positions, each of you trying to be president, trying to win a maximum of electoral positions. So for us, the first victory is to, give a positive answer, an appropriate answer to the Cameroonian population who have always been asking for that mutualization of the capacities. So when you have done this, a political opposition front with actors like the barrister Akere Muna, Honorable Cabral Libi, Prosper Nkuvondo, Celestin Njamen, George, Professor George Miyem, Jokam Chamini, Benoit Siga, Jean-Marc Bikoko, Olivier Billet, you have other political actors we are still, discussing with, like Joshua Osi, who agrees with the idea of transition. Let me tell you that we are going to constitute the biggest political platform in the country, and this will be, the most satisfactory thing that could have been given to the population of Cameroon in a whole.
But Olivier Billet, the Cameroonian government is describing your move as illegal. A statement from the Territorial Administration Minister Paul Atanga Nji on Tuesday said the Political Alliance for Change and the Alliance for Political Transition in Cameroon has no political parties under the law. So basically what you are doing is an illegality the law frowns on. How do you react to that?
Oh, we have taken note of that message of the Minister of Territorial Administration. Our observation is that maybe the Cameroonian government is getting afraid of what is going on, actually, since all the all the news of the country are now actually focused only on that issue. So they are just getting afraid. Let me just remind you that the political platforms are, things that have been, carried out in this country every time. This is not the first platform we have experiencing in Cameroon. When you had the Union for Change, Union pour le Changement in the 1992, and all those denominations of platforms aimed at, mutualizing the force of opposition in Cameroon. We have never seen a Ministry of Territorial Administration, coming and trying to intimidate the actors working on it.
Olivier Billet is the leader of the Liberators and a major proponent of the opposition alliance. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. A leading member of Uganda's opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP, is calling for reforms to attract voters and boost its electoral prospect. Parliamentarian Dr. Abed Bwanika warns that the failure to establish effective party structures will undermine efforts to win the 2026 general election. His comments follow reports of tensions within the party. This after the party demanded the resignation of Mathias Mpuuga, the party's commissioner in parliament, over allegations of corruption. Mpuuga denies the allegations and has refused to resign. For more about his calls for reforms, I reach parliamentarian Dr. Ebert Bwanika.
In the last elections, we performed very well in the central region. That is the biggest region in terms of population in this country. But we performed poorly in the other regions, especially as regards the members of parliament and the local government. So we needed to go in a little bit earlier so that we can begin to put our foot on the ground, get structures in that area so that this party can perform well in terms of the elections in 2026, that accrues out of the elections by members of the party. That is not yet done. And I'm telling them that we need to reform. We need to ensure that we organize the party on the democratic principles. Thirdly, we need to align in terms of ideology orientation. We seem to be swinging in every ideology. I'm seeing us positioning as if we are liberals, that worries some of us.
Why do you think this has taken a long time for even to be diagnosed? Looking at, you said, the performance of the party in the last general election.
The leadership of the party decided to, I think, the way I read them, they have put all their energies in the past 2 years on external linkages, and they have done very little in terms of the internal democracy, internal structures of the party. And that's what is worrying us, because we can build linkages in the West, we can build linkages in the East, but the party is in Uganda. It is important for us to build a formidable party within this country. And that's what is worrying us, because now we are remaining with less than 2 years to elections. We have had all this time. Currently, as I speak, the ruling party is already in the field. They are registering new members. They are confirming their old members. For us as a party, we are nowhere.
So, Dr. Bwanika, are you saying that as it stands now, the NUP appears ill-prepared? Because last time, officials said they were putting some structures in place. Bobby Wine, the party leader, and some parliamentarians were going around campaigning. Are you saying that is not enough to unify the party, to straighten out some of the things that you are talking about in order to ensure that the party is solid or resolute enough to pose any significant threat to the dominance of the NRM in 2 years to come?
Yes, if you are a party that contends for power, first of all, you must make sure that you are everywhere in the country. Our performance in 2021 was largely performance in the central region. Uganda has western region, it's a huge region. We have eastern region, we have northern region. We are not there in terms of representation, in terms of the local government. So as of now, if we move like this in the next 1 year, our performance might be even below the outcomes of 2021, and that is very, very worrying. If we want to be a formidable party, the leadership must accept we go in the field. That's how parties are built. You have to have structures. You must be spread in the entire country. The youth are there. The people who want to join the party are there. But the party is not reaching out. The party is not rolling out a roadmap. The party is concentrating on issues that really don't anchor the party among the people of Uganda. And it is going to affect our performance in 2026.
Supporters of the NUP are of the opinion that you are one of the few disgruntled people in the NUP airing your views in public and undermining the structures in the party, thereby washing the party's so-called dirty linen in public. And that is why you seem to be having problems with the national executive or perhaps even the leadership of the NUP.
I have attempted several times to speak to the leadership of the party. My last meeting with President Kyagulanyi Bobi Wine was 3.5 hours. The reason why I'm now speaking in the public is because We thought that there would be space within the party leadership for them to hear us so that we go and work. Now that they have failed to hear us within the leadership of the party, it is important that the nation, the membership of the party, hears our voice. We don't want to reach a stage where we can no longer perform, where our outposts are going to be affected by what is obtaining now, and then we blame ourselves and people will say, why did you keep quiet?
Dr. Abed Bwanika is the leader of and member of Uganda's opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP NUP. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Malawi has embarked on trials of genetically modified maize aimed to curb recurrent hunger and such pests as fall armyworms and caterpillars. The trials come amid concerns about the possible effects genetically modified organisms have on health and the environment. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe.
The fall armyworm has caused devastating crop losses across Africa since it arrived in 2016. In Malawi, at Lilongwe University of Agriculture and Natural Resources, biotechnology research scientist Kingdom Kwapata is leading studies in two varieties of maize whose genes have been modified to resist the pest. Such engineered crops are considered genetically modified organisms, or GMOs.
We needed a solution because our farmers are suffering. Our main purpose and aim for the research is to establish whether the gene that confers resistance against fall armyworms and other lepidopteran insects is effective.
The trials are expected to take about 5 years. They are conducted in a fenced and confined maize field 500 meters away from any traditional crop to avoid possible contamination with the traditional varieties. In the meantime, lawmakers, traditional leaders, and farmers have visited the trial site to observe its progress. Some farmers are excited about the trial, which is in its first year. Stanley Kapichila says this will solve the problem of lack of money to buy pesticide to kill fall armyworms, which have been attacking his maize garden for many years now. And he says he's now a happy farmer because these trials are solving the problem. Another subsistence farmer, Esther Ganjawala, is skeptical about the technology. She notes that replacing local maize varieties with high-yielding hybrids has created new troubles. She says that these new varieties are not good at all. You can't harvest anything without applying fertilizers, and they are also easily attacked by pests. She says that's why there is growing poverty. But with their local varieties, she says, they could harvest even without applying fertilizers. Researcher Kwapata says genetically modified crops have been introduced safely elsewhere, including the United States, Brazil, and Argentina. But many in Malawi are concerned about possible health and environmental impacts. Hadwell Kanie is a permaculture specialist with the Never Ending Food Project in Malawi.
So even though the target is to make sure the stalk borer doesn't attack the maize or the armyworms, but actually the introduction of this GMO will affect other beneficial insects such as bees and other birds. So that is something that we don't want. We don't want to disturb that cycle.
Kanie also fears that once introduced to farmers, the GMO maize would keep other local crops from growing. Kwapata says there is no evidence that would happen, but he acknowledges that people are concerned.
There's a lot of skepticism. There's a lot of political anxiety. But in the final analysis, as researchers, we are saying that the nation needs to give us a chance to do the research diligently, independently, without due influence.
Kwapata says the researchers will present the results of the trials only to government authorities so they can decide whether the GMO maize should be introduced in Malawi. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Lilongwe, Malawi.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The 20th edition of the Cape Epic Mountain Bike Stage Race gets underway on Sunday, with the promise of being the toughest and most competitive edition yet. The 8-day epic will cover 613 kilometers with over 16,000 meters of vertical climbing and starts with a prologue on Sunday at the Lawrence Ford Wine Estate in Somerset West. And now to Kenya, where the National Olympic Committee of Kenya has launched its sprinters program, signaling a significant step forward in Team Kenya's journey towards the Paris 2024 Olympics. With full determination, the National Olympic Committee of Kenya has taken charge of the entire relay team, comprising the 4x100m men, 4x400m men, 4x400m women, and the mixed relay. The program is designed to ensure meticulous training and preparation to position the team for success on the global stage. Isaac Kunda and Tyson Juma are two beneficiaries of the program.
As I'm going through my life in athletics, to all the athletes who are in this camp, I can see from their faces, their reactions, they feel so happy. And it's a great thing, and I encourage the committee to continue with that support. It's a pleasure.
For me, it's just to take the heart of 40 million with me, be confident enough, and just put my country where the name, to put the name of my country at the top.
In basketball news, the Nigerian national female basketball team, the Tigress, will know their group opponents for the Paris 2024 Olympics women's basketball event when the draw for the tournament holds at the Patrick Boyman House of Basketball in Switzerland on Tuesday, 19th of March. The draw will be overseen by basketball icons Penny Taylor and former NBA superstar Carmelo Anthony. The Tigress, poised for a consecutive appearance after participating in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, are seeded in Pot 4 alongside Puerto Rico and Germany. Nigeria's senior men's basketball team, the Tigers, unfortunately did not qualify for the competition for the first time since the 2012 London edition. In football news, the Mauritanian Football Association have confirmed the death of under 21 goalkeeper Mohamed El Mokhtar on Saturday. Multiple reports had noted that Mohamed El Mokhtar was involved in a violent collision with one of his teammates in training for his club AS Douanes. The 23-year-old suffered a concussion and was rushed to an intensive care unit where he passed away after falling into a coma. The tragic news resulted in the Mauritanian Football Association cancelling the Mauritanian Cup final between Douanes and Nadeubo, which was set to be played on the same day. A new Black Stars coach, Otto Addo, has named a 26-man squad for Nigeria and Uganda friendlies. The friendly game scheduled for Marrakech, Morocco, marked the beginning of a new era under coach Addo. Ghana will take on Nigeria on Friday, March 22nd, before facing Uganda 4 days later. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. It's back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. With respect to the current debate and discussions as to how appropriate it is for international intervention to tackle the gang problem in Haiti, a number of clarifications may help a better understanding. With the first point will be whether CARICOM, the regional peace and peacemaking regional groups, should be involved. Yes, it is understandable that many Asians, owing to the number of foreign intervention in Haiti that have failed, to say that they do not need any more and that the matter should be turned over to the Asians themselves to resolve. However, given the gang violence, it is not a responsible course to follow. CARICOM is a legitimate instrument in the context of the United Nations. It is part of Chapter 8, which authorizes regional institutions to help resolve disputes. One could say that CARICOM, as was the case with ECOMOG in West Africa, could help to resolve the issue. As may be recalled, in the late 1980s, when rival ethnic armies were killing each other in Liberia, ECOWAS leaders responsibly and creatively decided to intervene. They were aware that the world had abandoned Liberia, so they did not wait for the Security Council to act. They decided to create what became known as ECOMOG. All they did was to ask the Secretary General to provide technical help in the creation of ECOMOG. That was freely given. And ECOMOG launched a military intervention to tackle these rival ethnic groups. They were very successful. And that model was used also in Sierra Leone when faced with similar problems, and later in other West African countries. So Haitians should allow CARICOM to play a role. And it was appropriate that CARICOM convened a meeting to see how best to convince Prime Minister Onge to resign, to be replaced with a transition body that would help Haiti to achieve free and fair elections. It is necessary that the Haitians also take into account some of the complications which have ensued. The Security Council requested volunteers to go in, and Kenya showed responsibility by volunteering to send 1,000 policemen. The Security Council in November adopted a resolution under Chapter 7, and the Kenyans were then proceeding to implement that resolution. The problem was that it countered difficulties in Kenya, where Kenyans decided that the force police should not proceed because it would violate a specific provision in the Constitution. But one must understand what their objections were. It was not that Kenya cannot provide peacekeeping force for the United Nations. They have done it before. But they were talking specifically of the police, which was not allowed. But there were a number of examples which could have been presented to the courts in Kenya. For example, in the last decades, when Sweden and Finland were neutral, these countries were the backbone of United Nations peacekeeping. Of course, being neutral, they were not allowed to send their military force outside the countries. So whenever they were asked by the UN to provide contingents, they would go to Parliament and have an enabling legislation that would permit the government to do so. This could have been followed in Kenya. Secondly, it is a well-known practice that when the United Nations launches such operation, they will sign what is called Status of Forces Agreement, SOFA, which means it will lay down conditions between the United Nations and the host countries. That too was not followed, and it meant a delay. And that delay has allowed troublemakers to gain the upper hand. I thank you.
That was Waman's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Yeah. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from our selection.
For the week, hold up lighters on the beach, maybe come close and drop the kiss close. with your eyes and make it sweet. I want more like a liver, my liver. Want to see more of the figure, figure. Bring your face and drop the keys. Shooting star now make a wish. 15 million for the week. All of life is on the beach. Baby, come close and pop the keys. Close your eyes and make it sweet. Bouge, 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 bouge. Dance, 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 yeah. Bouge, 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 bouge. Dance, 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 dance,
Mikono you daily and let the blessings fall on me. I'm in a zone while she whine on me. Hey, give it to me, baby, so slowly. I need tarot.
Too much care, my dear. Waka waka wa Sunday, my dear. Too much care.
Kwa marashi na huka Wazamani sitaki tena Uli kufa kiansi msipa hey. Ila kwa kumetulia Ujawani nunia Unichiti na nilea Yari kumo
hey, Cause mini mtoto wapwani Kwani nini kipita wavu tena marashi mahi The hug a smell of all on me. She like it how I ride the beat. I whisper loving in her ear slowly. Journey cool, baby, mgongoni, baby. Only put is it, girl. My baby, don't you worry. Fall in my arms and twirl. My baby, push it on.
Cause I talk open that way with every single loving day. I'm on my way, making sure my level straight. And I don't want nobody that's gonna be up in my way. I got my baby, she my baby. Talk open that way with every single loving day. I'm on my way, making sure my level straight. And I don't want nobody that's gonna be up in my way. I got my baby, she my baby.
Ain't Texas.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington.
There's a tornado.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer the great Justin Thwaites, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, success of an orphan is an arrow to the hearts of witches. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Round, 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 round. So pack your legs, throw your keys out. Stick around, round, 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 round. And I'll be damned if I can't slow dance with you. Come close, come sugar on me, honey, too. It's
take it to the floor.
I'll be damned if I cannot dance with you. Come pour some liquor on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down.